our boy guy.
Good morning and welcome back to another episode of Breakfast with the Gators, part of the Stadium and Gale Network and brought to you by our sponsor, Norris & Norris PA. Norris & Norris PA is out of Lake City, Florida, a preeminent law firm serving North Florida since 1985. And you can give Guy a call at 386-752-7240 if you need any assistance with business law matters, real estate wills, or trust and estate planning. Well, guys, the last time we spoke, a lot of things have changed, but more importantly, we got to enjoy a regular season finale in the Swamp one last time for the 2025 season, officially closing the Billy Napier era. Gators roll Florida State 40-21, just an electric night in the Swamp. As you can see, this picture was from the game Saturday night during Won't Back Down. 90,000 strong. I believe, Will, you're the only one on the podcast that decided to make it outside of myself, obviously, with this picture as evidence, that made an appearance in Ben Hill Griffin Stadium. What were just your thoughts on the stadium? I know a lot of things have occurred in the last 48 hours or so, but for that fan base to come out for a 3-8, now 4-8 football team and show the support they did on Senior Day.
It was impressive. You know, when the Lane Kiffin news dropped on Friday, I was a little worried that we'd probably get a 60 or 70,000 person full Swamp. But, you know, shout out to the Gator fans, man. They, it doesn't matter, rain, shine, hurricane, or green wave, they are ready to come and defend the Swamp. You know, the tailgate scene was a little light, but that will typically happen for FSU whenever it's two pretty terrible teams, given the Thanksgiving holiday and everything like that. So the tailgate scene was a little bit light, but when you walked into the stadium, you could kind of tell like the bad blood just started boiling up. And you remembered that we were there to play the Florida State Seminoles. And luckily the team came out right from the jump and really smacked them in the face. And so hats off to the fans. Some pockets of the stadium were a little empty until about the middle of the first quarter. But once they trickled in, it was a packed house and they were loud. They were proud. And They sent the seniors off right. So hats off to the fans. Hats off to the players for playing hard and closing the season out the right way against the Noles.
Yeah, and obviously our preseason hot takes did not come to fruition for the most part this year out of our group. But the closest one, Hunter, you said Jaden Ball would receive more Heisman votes than DJ Lagway. Obviously, he's not going to receive any Heisman votes, but an electric night out of our sophomore sensation, Jaden Ball. I think he needed 96 yards to reach that 1,000-yard mark. And I think he hit that in the first quarter, finishing on 266 yards, 1,170 on the season, and two scores. Just what did you see out of the workhorse tonight and, you know, the game plan to get him involved early and often? I think he finished like 38 carries.
Jackson, we're going to talk a lot tonight about coaching and who the next coach of the Florida Gators will be. Whoever it is, the first thing he needs to do is you get on the phone with Jaden Ball, your star running back, and you make sure he's the running back coming out of the tunnel next year in 2026. That's the first thing you need to do. The kid's a star. We said it from the beginning. I remember, and really I don't want to mention the name Billy Napier too many times on this podcast, but it's truly just another indictment of the guy because we talked often in the first few games and they did that rotation where Jacoby Jackson's coming in every three series, and we said it. Nothing against Jacoby. Great kid, but Jaden Ball's that guy, and he's been that guy all year. So it was awesome to see him do that tonight and to do it against Florida State. He was incredible. He was incredible to watch.
Yeah, and Dev, I know you just a short 80-minute drive from the stadium. I don't think you were there tonight, and you early ejected yourself last week after the first quarter of Tennessee. So you missed the last seven quarters of Gator football to end the 2025 season. What would you just see from the Gators tonight and how important it is, despite the horrendous season we've had, just to go out on top and beat Minnie Mike and the Noles in the fashion we did?
Yeah, there's something really satisfying about beating Florida State, no matter how bad we are. I said before the game last week against Tennessee that the problem about having a bad season and being a bad team is that your rivals don't care when you're bad, because – you know, For Tennessee, they beat the Florida Gators last week. Well, for us, we beat Florida State this week. And no matter how bad we are, no matter how embarrassing the administration treats the logo, we beat Florida State today. And we embarrassed them. They have to go back to Tallahassee. They have to sit and watch on TV and watch that product, knowing that they're bringing that same coach back next year. And, you know, for us, we have the hope of a new regime, and we can get into that a little bit later. But, I'm really proud of the way that they finished the season. You know, they teetered a couple times against Kentucky and against Tennessee. But they, to come out on senior night tonight, play for the patch, we kind of joked about it a lot over the last few weeks, but to play for the patch, to come out and blow out Florida State, that felt good. And I think that the fans needed it. You know, when the news came out yesterday about Kiffin and how this whole thing went down over the last week, I think that I drifted back and forth between apathy and anger. And, you know, we've kind of talked through it. You know, the whole fan base has kind of reacted and been loud. And I think that showing up to the stadium, putting 90,000 people in the stands and blowing out your rival is about as proud as you can be of the fans and the players. So tomorrow's problems are tomorrow's problems. Tonight we beat Florida State. We beat them soundly. And even through the worst couple of days, maybe that we'll have in the history of Florida football, maybe we're still 19 points better than Florida State. And that feels pretty damn good tonight. So,
yeah. And one big moment, Sam, I'll let you touch on, I know we were texting throughout the game, but one pivotal moment late in the first half. I know we didn't capitalize on it, but Caleb Banks diving on a Tommy Cassiano's fumble. Just talk about 88, him coming back despite, you know, a season ending injury. I forgot how early in the year that was. I think LSU, he re-aggravated himself, and that was his first game back. So for him to come back and play for the patch and the Gators, just talk about the testament from him and how big of a moment it was just for the defense to play well tonight.
Yeah, that says a lot. It says everything that I think we've said that would echo Billy G as the interim, just playing for the University of Florida. And Caleb Banks had no reason to suit up the previous games and tonight, you know, and for him to lay out in the bottom of the pile, that was a huge moment. Like you said, they were driving before the end of the first half. They score there. You never know what happens, but for us to get a turnover there, it really just allowed us to settle in and continue to feed Jaden Baugh. Like Hunter mentioned, that guy is just that guy's incredible. He's special. That's phone call number one for whoever our next coach is. Obviously, we'll get into that. But yeah, he's unbelievable. You know, he has nothing at the line of scrimmage, and he still gets 4 yards. And then he just bursts off the line of scrimmage. He's just such a great player. But great to get a win. And it's funny you mentioned, Devin, about the beating them, and they have that coach coming back. I got a new Mount Rushmore for you guys, and it's the Big Four. And up there is going to be Dan Mullen, Greg Knox, Billy Napier, and Billy Gonzalez. And that is the Mount Rushmore of coaches that Mike Norvell has been unable to beat as his time at Florida State, which is very funny. But always good to beat Florida State. It's great. It's great to be a Gator today. I will say that. Been some trials and tribulations, of course, this year of our Lord 2025. But hopefully we're on to better days, and maybe this can be the start of something new.
I don't know how they're not having an insurrection at Florida State with that Mount Rushmore you just displayed, Sam. I mean, Sam, that is
– It costs money to put together an insurrection, Jackson.
Well, it's very simple. It's very simple. Florida State doesn't have a true fan base. They're all Georgia fans right now. They hate the University of Florida. Every single one of them. They're there. They're doing their little chop. They don't care. They're there to beat Florida. When Florida plays Georgia, they're there to beat Florida. When Miami plays Florida, they're there to beat Florida. Like, it doesn't matter. The ACC is such a different world than SEC football. It just that school, that fan base, that I don't even get me started on it. They're a pathetic team. not firing that guy after he went 2-10 and then he goes 5-7 and gets blown off, his doors blown off back-to-back weeks by terrible teams. Give me a break. It's unbelievable. That is a Jimmy Sexton masterpiece, what they did, what he did, locking Mike Norvell up at Florida State for that long. Unbelievable. It couldn't have happened to a better group of bastards.
Well, Will's, I think Will's cliff farming a little bit. I hate Florida State more than anyone. And the way you described the fan base a little bit, I think you'd get some pushback. I think they have some passionate fans that are all very pissed about what's going on with their administration and then not firing Mike Norvell. But let me be very clear. I touched on Jaden Ball a little bit in Jackson's first question. Beating Florida State is my favorite thing. And I'm not just talking about in football, Jackson. That's just my favorite thing. Beating Florida State is the best. I went to school in Jacksonville growing up, and so you get 90% fans of either Florida State and Florida. The other 10% is the miscellaneous. You got the Georgias, the Ohio State, the Bamas. Half of my friend group, if not more, were Florida State fans. A lot of people view Georgia as the biggest rival. For me, it will always be Florida State just because of how I grew up and how many Florida State fans I grew up around. I hate them with a burning passion. And watching us beat them on a night like that with the 48 hours we've had as a fan base, there were times over these 48 hours I just thought to myself, you know, in the college football world, who has a worse stretch right now? Who could have it worse? This is so embarrassing. And then we go out and beat a team 40-21 that's keeping their coach next year. I, like you said, I have no idea how they're not leaving it, you know. They should be protesting in the streets of Tallahassee right now, getting that guy out of town. It's so sad, but it's you know, at their expense. I love it.
I think it's all for show. They just want to be the Gators. They can't do it.
Well, anything else you guys want to highlight on Florida State, the game, or dive into? Go ahead, Sam.
Just got a shout out my kicker, Trace Mack. Went out. I know he missed the extra point, but
it's tough.
Not going to call out anyone who might have potentially jinxed that. But nailed the 54-yarder. I think he finished his career with 10 field goals of 50 yards plus. Very underrated career as a kicker. So shout out to him going out with a bang.
That's a school record, right? He broke that. Was that like the 7th or 18th?
I think he broke McPherson's record for most 50-yard field goals or something like that.
Cannot confirm or deny, but been on a nice little run of kickers, you know. Eddie P kind of – I mean, you got to be good at something.
Hey, used to be punters, but they're no longer people, so we've switched to kickers now. But I would say one disappointing thing, and you guys had the replay at home. I feel bad Vernell Brown did not score one time this year. As electrifying as he was for us and not to get in the end zone, I guess you guys said that was his elbow that hit the ground, not the football, and that I think is the opening drive touchdown that got called back.
It was close. I thought it looked like it hit the ground probably. It was just kind of a microcosm of the season. He'll have plenty of opportunities to score in the explosive offense we'll be running next year. So.
He's going to be riding the green wave, isn't he?
He had that screen, too, that he almost just – when then the interception was the next play after. But, man, he almost took that screen to the – that was the most exciting 10-yard screen pass I think I've ever seen. He just absolutely exploded.
Yeah. Well, I feel bad for our boy VB3 for not getting the end zone this year, but – the last 48 hours have been a whirlwind of emotions. The texts we've had, the family conversations we've had over the Thanksgiving holiday, being stuck with a lot of people you probably don't see too often throughout the year, and them asking you questions or rubbing it in your face if they're another fan base. And, you know, I was going to wear a clown nose tonight just due to the whole dysfunction in the last 48 hours, but I did not want to be accused of culture appropriation of Florida State and the circus they have in Tallahassee, so we did avoid that. But the Lane Kiffin news broke that we are out of the sweepstakes. I think that was Friday. I was on the first hole playing golf for the first time in 7 weeks at Edina, trying to enjoy myself at a beautiful golf course, playing with Tennessee fans. So they had all the Kiffin chirps, you know, how he spurned them in the middle of the night. But I'll start with you, Will, and your your Green Wave background and what the coaching cycle looks like nowadays.
Well, I don't know what the question was there, but are you just asking my thoughts on it?
I'm just asking your thoughts. And I will say, hand up, we were wrong, and the leaders of the – we publicly endorsed Lane Kiffin, I think, like week three. Oh,
I don't know that we were wrong per se. I mean, we will be the first to say we were not correct. The Breakfast Boys are not ever going to mislead you. however, if you look at the way that Zach Abelverde reported that, it said that Florida was pulling out of the Lane Kiffin sweepstakes because of irregular communication. And that's very different than him reporting that Lane Kiffin is saying that he's not coming, no longer considering Florida. This was Florida's decision to pull out Scott Strickland's decision to no longer pursue Lane Kiffin. Because he wasn't ready to make up his time. And, you know, this is going to drop on Sunday morning, and I don't think we still don't have a decision from Lane Kiffin one way or another what he's going to do. And so for whatever reason, Florida ran out of time, and they decided that they really needed to go get, you know, all the reports are saying John Summerall before anybody else did. And it really pains me as a Gator fan. I haven't been this – I guess that's why I'm speaking so lowly of Florida State, really, is I haven't been this low as a Gator in quite some time. Never during the Mike White time, never during McElwain, never during Muschamp. But it just seems like that the University of Florida with Scott Strickland at the helm, it's resigning itself to be a middle-tier SEC program. Like, we can make jokes about Nebraska. I think Tennessee pre-Heupel is probably closer to where we are, because the one lucky part that we have, given that we're the University of Florida, is that there will always be that inherent recruiting background that we have, that where the right coach could come in and flip it. But, you know, we've said it over and over on the podcast that what the University of Florida needs right now is an injection of offensive talent. And that's why I was stumping for Jed Fish so hard. And it's not because Jed Fish was the perfect candidate by any means. But if you weren't going to get Lane Kiffin, you kind of had a perfect contingency plan where a diehard Gator would come in here and he knew offense. He knows the University of Florida. He would hate Florida State. He would hate Georgia. He could be able to develop DJ Lagway. He might be able to have Vernell Brown score his first offensive touchdown of his career. You got great pieces all around. And I was impressed with his resume once you take away the fact that he went 1-10 in his first year when his best players at Arizona were walk-ons. But there are other candidates. And just hiring John Summerall, like, he might work out, but that's just not what the University of Florida needs. Like, you go see how many one-score games he's played at Tulane and Troy, and that's not what makes up championship-level coaches. Like, if you go look at what Nick Saban did and what Urban Meyer did and what Kurt Cignetti did and all these guys who are true superstars slaughtered the competition that they had. They slaughtered them because they were so much better coaches or recruiters or talent evaluators or whatever, but it wasn't like that. And when you're putting yourself in one score games, as we said with Billy all the time, when you put yourselves in one score games, that's because you're not taking advantage of the margins. And so I'm very worried as a Gator fan that, you know, we might hire a guy who's a ball coach, who's a disciplinarian, who, you know, people think like he might be no nonsense or whatever, much less drama than Lane Kiffin. He's just not what the University of Florida needs. And so we'll see. I guess we're going to hire him. I guess we are going to be riding the green wave. You know, I'm probably going to be sick to my stomach when he trots out there wearing a black polo against FAU next year. But it's just sad. It feels like we are entering the Tennessee territory where the administration just doesn't see eye to eye with the fans, and maybe we'll get a very lucky year where we'll go like 10-2 or everything. But I just don't believe that the University of Florida is going to have the middle tier booster support outside of, you know, the top three to five guys who are giving millions of dollars. I don't see average fans donating and trying to get behind this guy and trying to help bring in the talent that's necessary to beat Georgia and beat Alabama and all this stuff. And, We'll see how it plays out, but I'm not impressed. I'm bummed, and I wish we were hiring anybody else.
Yeah, well, you kind of let it out that, you know, Football Scoop came out Friday after the Kiffin news that we would be zeroing in on John Summerall. But I'll play a voicemail from Alex real quick before we get your thoughts here.
Hey, this is Alex calling in from Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Just wanted to give a shout out to the boys for getting it done and ruining FSU's chances at a bowl game. And I just had a good question. Someone just texted me. Why have Lane when you can have Tulane? Go Gators.
I fear Will is on the verge of tears right now listening to that, but Dev.
I said earlier that I was drifting back and forth between apathy and anger, and hearing that put me back into the anger side. The first point that Will made, I think it's kind of emblematic of where we're at. We gave, apparently, according to Abelverde's reporting, Lane a deadline and did not meet that he did not meet that deadline. So we decided to pivot to John Summerall. That's our backup plan. That's an issue in itself. But here we are recording on Saturday night and still don't have a firm answer from Summerall either. So what was the point of giving the initial deadline when we don't have an answer from either candidate? Because it looks to me like Summerall would like to see what's happening around the country too with these other jobs before he makes his decision. So I'm at a loss, man. I really am. It's for this to be the second choice. You know, it's one thing to not hit on your top candidate. For your second choice to be Billy Napier in green, or he still wears black, but Tulane Billy Napier, it just boggles your mind that the administration thinks that this is the guy that they can present to Gator Nation. The guy that, you know, the last guy we paid $21 million to go away. We hire the almost carbon copy resume. You know, we're bringing in Will Muschamp with less of a pedigree. The Gator Nation football podcast guys had a long post earlier. And I think that it's worthwhile to repeat some of the stats on John Summerall. Billy Napier in his time at UL compared to John Summerall's time at Troy and Tulane. Napier's average margin of victory, 12.1 points. Summerall's average margin of victory, 11.8 points. Record in one score games, Napier was 13-1. Summerall was 10-3. Scoring defense between 19 and 22 points a game for Napier, 17 to 20 points per game for Summerall. Never having a top 20 offense at Tulane. I think it's the most underwhelming hire we could have possibly made. You know, we heard the buzz last week with Abelverde saying that we were interviewing Summerall, and I think all of us kind of brushed it aside, and obviously the report came out after that they had canceled the meeting and he had pulled himself out of the running for the job. I don't think that there could be a more underwhelming hire. You know, we were talking Drink and Key, Fish, all these backup options, and all guys that, you know, we kind of said maybe aren't great fits at Florida or aren't, you know, ready for the Florida job. We think that maybe they're dependent on their quarterback or the system that they're in that might not align with Florida. For us to go and hire a defensive minded head coach from Tulane that has 4 years of experience at the G5 level, when we were promised by our athletic director that we were going after a proven Power 5 head coach that's had success at the highest level. I don't know how this was the decision that they landed on. Obviously, it's not final, so things can change, but I think our rivals are rejoicing at the hire, and I think that these last 48 hours going into whatever the final decision tomorrow may be could set back the program. Obviously, I'm going to be there cheering on the Gators. as much as I can, but I think that this was a this is a massive mistake, and I hope it works out. Even if it works out, the process wasn't right to get here. I think that the trust between the school and the athletic and the fans are is gone. I don't know.
It's irreparably broken. It'll never be back.
It might take a decade to rebuild and repair this relationship between the fan base and the football administration folks. So hopefully it works out. Hopefully it works out.
I had marked myself safe from believing that Scott Strickland would follow up a G5 guy from Louisiana who was the worst coach in Florida football history since World War II with another G5 guy from Louisiana. I mean, that is just – think about that.
It shouldn't matter that he's also from a G5. Like, it's different candidates, but for it to be the exact same guy, the profile for them, they're the exact same.
I just don't know how he's going to try to sell this to the fan base. Like, I think about what the introductory press conference is going to be. Like, are some of our beat reporters automatically going to be asking the questions the fans want? Like, I would love for them to, you know, it's going to be awkward with Summerall being there, but like, I would love for them to ask, what happened in the search? We need a tell all.
At least if you went the G5 route, I mean, Alex Golish, his name is mentioned for the first time this entire cycle in that same article, I believe, by Football Scoop. Is that correct? Or is that Bruce
Ellman? That was The Athletic.
Okay, The Athletic, yeah. And, you know, speaking of people, at least, you know, when Urban came here from the Mountain West, I believe Utah was in at that point way back in 2004, he was averaging 45 points a game. Alex Golish is averaging 43, 44 points. Now, at least they have an identity on what Florida fans are looking for. And Dev, you gave all the reasons that Summerall does not check those boxes that we were adamant about trying to receive in our new hire. Hunter or Sam, your thoughts?
Yeah, it comes back to Scott Strickland for me. They touched on it. It's funny, I was thinking back to when we started the podcast in one of the first episodes. I made a comment about a lot of the disdain towards Scott Strickland and how coming off the basketball national championship, it felt like a waste to beat that drum just because he was safe and he had the extension. I'd like to apologize for that take. You should be able to publicly, privately, however you like, criticize when you see it is necessary, and it is necessary. Scott Strickland gave a press conference after Billy Napier's firing, and we talked about it. We even read quotes from him. We talked about him saying all the right things. And then we also talked about how those are just words, and there have to be actions that follow those words for them to mean anything. And he's shown us those words are hollow. He didn't do anything. If he hires John Summerall, and even if he doesn't hire John Summerall, just how the process has gone this far with how things unfolded with Lane, those words were just words. He talked about hiring, championship pedigree coaches. And I just, looking at his resume, I don't see how John Summerall fits that bill. And he talked about hiring someone that's fit for the University of Florida. I don't see how another group of five coach, especially one that's defensive minded, fits that bill. It just doesn't make sense to me. And in the other aspect we haven't touched on is he hires Turnkey, right? This national coaching firm that's known. I remember seeing tweet after tweet about the list of hires that the help schools make, and it's big name after big name after big name, and all the people reporting on Turnkey's guidance, I know a lot of it's confidential, seem to say that John Summerall's name either wasn't on that list or was way far down that list when talking about Turnkey's advice. And it just blows my mind, right? You talk about Scott Strickland's process, he hires this firm and potentially ignores them in entirety or disregards their guidance when it comes to how to handle the Lane Kiffin timeline. It's a mess. It's a mess, man. It's a mess. And it starts and ends with Scott Strickland. He's got to go.
I don't see how he survives this. I don't know. I don't know how the exit strategy works for him. But this time next year, I just don't see a world where he's still the athletic director after this debacle. The fact that there's guys, you know, you never know what it's silly season, so you never know with the reporting what's real, what's not real. If it's true that a Lincoln Riley was looking to get out of USC, and we chose John Summerall over Lincoln Riley after we chose Billy Napier over Lincoln Riley and Brian Kelly last time, it boggles the mind. You know, and another thing with this is I would like to know if, you know, Scott Strickland, it was widely reported the Billy Napier cycle that he had fixated on Billy. And, you know, he impressed him in the interview. He had a big, thick binder with a bunch of handwritten notes in it. And that, like, totally sold Scott and the hiring crew on Billy in 2021. I'd like to know if Scott and, you know, whoever else was a part of this decision-making process watched the games that he was coaching. Because I think that all of the issues that you saw with Billy Napier were the in-game management stuff that you don't really see when you're looking at a resume and looking in a binder. So I hope that he did that kind of research when making this decision. You know, what kind of tendencies, what kind of aggressiveness, does he know when to use his timeouts at the end of halves? Does he know when to, you know, get 11 guys on the field for special teams? Does he know, you know, how to manage a clock at the end of a game? I think those sorts of things that Billy was so bad at, I really hope that Summerall doesn't have those same issues, because that's what really frustrated the fans with the last 4 years. So there's no way he can win the press conference, unfortunately, is the real issue. And it's unfair to him, but it's more unfair to us having to put up with it for another 3 or 4 years before he gets overwhelmed by the job too. So,
yeah, the press conference is already lost and we haven't even made the announcement yet. So it's never great for optics. And this is kind of what happens when you put all your eggs in one basket, or theoretically you think you did. But, and to your point, Devin, John Summerall could be a great coach, could be an awesome guy for all intents and purposes. And it's unfair that he's getting absolutely bashed, but this is a benefactor of the situation that Scott Strickland has put us in, because this whole time it was, oh, the Gators are moving a little bit different. It's quiet. It's, you know, now this moving in silence. Like, it was a load of crap. And it was the same Scott Strickland who is seemingly scared to make a move. Like, don't get me wrong, the Golden hire paid off, but he went and hired the coach from San Francisco, great hire. But on when there were rumors back then that bigger name coaches at big programs might have been interested in the job. But not to draw comparisons to that, but it's yeah, it's unfortunate. And you know, you really mentioned Summerall and all this. Like, my biggest thing is when you have a talented roster as we do, and we know we have it, evident of what we did to Florida State, and I mean, we beat Texas. They're more than likely probably in the playoff. We'll see. You needed to hire a coach that's going to be able to retain the majority of this talent. And I really question if this is of the options that were out there. I think this might have been like the worst in that aspect. And that's concerning, because you're looking at a whole roster flip potentially. And yeah, not going to get into specifics, but like, are some of these really talented players we have really going to like watch the Tulane film and say, yeah, sign me up for that?
Like, well, they signed up for Billy, so
maybe they'll see that the offense is the exact same and they'll figure they already know the plays.
Yeah, but it's crazy. It's a term of events, but some people on this podcast might have put their necks out a little bit more than I did in terms of the sweepstakes for someone that I'm not going to name, but this is, you know, I have battered sports fan syndrome, so I moved kind of silently the whole time, and obviously I was totally in it and wanted it to happen, but it sucks that we're here. And
hey, that's okay. If you can't take the heat, you got to get out of the kitchen. Me and Jackson will stand in the paint all day with these burner accounts from Ole Miss and in LSU. We're not afraid of those guys. It's really interesting if you go back and look at the reporting that was done right when Billy was fired about how this search was going to play out. And so I don't think that it was really a load of crap that, you know, what Scott said he didn't end up doing. I think he was doing it. Like, all reports were that Florida was feeling good. We liked the way the search was going and everything. I think he got cold feet on Tuesday night when, or Wednesday when, you know, Lane didn't abide by his arbitrary deadline. And he panicked and pulled out because he has gone back on everything that was immediately reported about, you know, Florida is going to look for, they're not going to go the G5 route. They are looking for an offensive guy that fits Florida. He said all these things, and it seemed like based on, you know, what we knew to be the candidate pool and what the hiring, what the interviews were looking like. And obviously Lane was the first choice, but even after that, it just seemed like this Summerall thing kind of came out of nowhere once Abelverde reported the meeting on Thursday, which was, you know, reported by On3, then refuted by On3, then confirmed again by On3 and 247. Now, obviously, it took place, or there were other meetings that took place, and it looks like that's where we're going to go. But it's just crazy to see sort of the twists and turns that this search has taken in the last like 3 days, and this is where we're ending up.
Maybe we'll be wrong, because I mean, if you look at it, we've been wrong this whole time, right? I mean, we talked to Lane, we talked to Jed, we talked to Kenny, we talked to Riley. I think Drake was mentioned. We talked about smaller coordinators like Hartline. We talked about Stein. We talked about James Franklin. Dabo was mentioned. When did we talk about John Summerall? I mean, maybe we're just bad at this. Maybe he won't.
The crazy thing is every single one of the names that you said would have been better hires. I don't understand how you let James Franklin sign with Virginia Tech 2 weeks ago. How does that happen? John Summerall after that. I don't understand. Can someone explain to me how you let an Eli Drinkwitz and a Clark Lee, both of whom have had success in the SEC, I didn't think that they would be great fits. I didn't know that our number two was going to wind up being John Summerall. We legitimately chose boys. There was 20 names thrown out there for who could get this job, and I liked maybe like 3, 4, 5 of them. John Summerall was 29th on that list. If this goes over the finish line and everything as of 11:45 on Saturday night looks like that it's going to, this is the worst hire they could have possibly made. Not because John Summerall doesn't have a decent resume and that he might not be a good coach and he might be successful at the University of Florida. To do to your fans and to get up on a press conference stage and try to sell them on exactly what we pay on the exact same guy, the exact same resume that we just paid the last guy $21 million to go away for. It's not fair to John Summerall. But you cannot do that to your fans. You cannot do it. The guy's coming into a situation. He's coming into a hornet's nest now where nobody's bought in. The fan base is let down. And it's an uphill battle from, you know, day one until he proves that he has success. It's going to be an uphill battle with the fans. It's going to be an uphill battle with the recruits. And it boggles my mind. This was the worst possible hire that could have been made. And somehow, some way, this administration figured out how to do it.
Maybe Hunter is correct and the Breakfast Boys will continue to be wrong about everything.
That was my point. My point was hopefully that we're just dead wrong because we've been wrong the whole time. And that by the time people listen to this, we're just wrong again. That's my hope.
I'm worried that we're statistically due to be right at some point.
I don't know, Will. I don't know. You've been wrong a lot for years.
I've been wrong a lot for years. I am longing to be right, but not about this.
Yeah.
We'll take Jed.
We will take Jed. We got too picky, nitpicking Brent Key.
Yeah, Jed would walk here, so... I thought he had a chance today, Will. I thought he had a chance Saturday night to upset Oregon. And
yeah, he doesn't have – I know people will look at his record, but he doesn't have the bodies to compete in the Big Ten right now. Like
Washington, doesn't help when you're only at a program for 2 years at a time as well. You really can't build a culture or a roster.
I take major issue with that. The guy went from 1-10 at Washington to 10-3. And then he had to took over a Washington program that had all the players either leave or graduate after DeBoer took the Alabama job. And they had to shift from playing in the weak Pac-12 to the Big Ten. I mean, he's trying to get beefy boys in there to compete with the likes of Oregon and Oregon, Michigan, and Ohio State. And he lost in a rainstorm to hurricane snow sleet to Wisconsin. The guy knows more about offensive football than anybody else except for Lincoln Riley. Get him in here to develop DJ Lagway and throw the ball to Vernell Brown Jr. and Dallas Wilson and hand the ball off to Jaden Baugh. He's going to have another early round draft pick running back. His quarterback is only a true sophomore. I mean, it would be too easy for Scott Strickland literally just be like, well, we whiffed on Lane Kiffin. Let's go hire the guy that is like not nearly as good as Lane Kiffin, but at least is an offensive guy and understands Florida. That can't do that. Florida fans might be okay with that one. We got to go find this John Summerall guy and prove to everybody that I'm the smartest AD in the world. He's got to go. We got to fire this guy. Board of Trustees, if you're listening to this, I know there are some of you who listen. Please, we are begging you. This fan base deserves so much more. You see that? That's a 3-8 team out there packing 90,000 people in the swamp. 18th straight sellout. The Gators have been awful for the last 3 years. The worst we've been since World War II, and they're still selling out the stadium. And the athletic director is just parading around here. Actually, that's a misstatement. He's not parading around because he's nowhere to be found. He's hiding. And he's just going to get away with this. And nobody's going to hold him accountable. It's absolutely unconscionable. Like, us fans deserve so much better. I'm furious over this. And not even about John Summerall. He could call Lane Kiffin, and he could hire Lane Kiffin. Lane could come home and say, yeah, I'm going to actually go to Florida despite everything. The process is so bad. The hiring process is so bad. The extension process has been bad, going all the way to Jim McElwain when he extended the guy despite having internal issues with him, just to fire him a year later, extending Mike White, all this stuff. It's unconscionable. He's got to go. We have to fire Scott Strickland. We're going to be 8-4 at absolute best. No consistently making the playoffs. Meanwhile, Vanderbilt will be making the playoffs while Scott Strickland is in charge. You're not going to get the alumni support that you need. You're not going to get the donations for Florida Victorias that you need. You're just not going to be able to. And so if the University of Florida is just supposed to be an academic institution, then maybe, you know, we all need to rethink what we think about and our expectations. But I think that this can be a place that competes like with Georgia and Alabama for championships every single year. And so we got to have an athletic director that's willing to do that. And right now we don't have that.
We joke that we're Purdue with palm trees. And I think the last 48 hours has cemented us that thought is now a belief and reality, unfortunately, that the University of Florida is now Purdue with palm trees.
Yesterday was one of the worst days in the history of the program. Like, not because you missed on Lane Kiffin, but because of the bad process that we all have kind of known exists and has existed for 10 or 15 years now, that being out in the open for everybody to see in a public way for a candidate that you publicly pursued and claimed was your number one choice, to bail out of that 24 hours before. Here's the thing with the PR aspect of it. If you stay in the sweepstakes and he picks LSU, or he chooses to stay at Ole Miss, the fans are mad at Lane Kiffin. To 24 hours before he makes that decision to pull yourself out of the race publicly is a disaster. It's a disaster.
Yeah.
Let's talk some basketball.
Yeah. That ain't going much better. Gators out in San Diego this lovely Thanksgiving holiday. Thursday, we opened with TCU, who lost to New Orleans College. So I heard some LSU fans were in my mentions after that loss. Gators go out west. Second time this year hitting a West Coast trip. I think TCU is around the 75th mark in KenPom. Thursday, they beat the Gators 84-80, overcome a 10-point deficit in the second half. It was just all-around bad basketball. I believe 19 turnovers as a team, 5 from your All-American, All-SEC player Tommy Houck. Xavier Lee, Boogie Flam, both with 4 turnovers. They both foul out. Just an all-around poor, poor effort. But the bounce back against a decent Providence team, I think we beat them kind of handily, 90-78. Lot better, arguably Xavier Lee's best game. I didn't get to watch Friday. I was out playing golf, but watched a Thursday show showing against TCU. But Sam, were you able to watch some Gator hoops this Thanksgiving break?
I watched the atrocity against TCU. Watched glimpses of the first half against Providence, but yeah, the TCU game, just the turnovers were really just head scratching and like really concerning. And that was another game similar to the Arizona game where the guard play just, it was, you can be honest, it was awful. And Urban was a bright spot. It was good to see Urban come off the bench and play like that. But yeah, that was a tough game, and I don't think TCU is not a bad team. I know Jamie Dixon's a good coach, been around the block for a while. But you shouldn't lose to them with the talent that we have. And it was uncharacteristic for, like you said, Tommy, 5 turnovers. Just a really sloppy game, but good to come back and a bounce back against Providence. Hopefully Xavier Lee can kind of build off some of his confidence. I think he made like, I don't know if he made like 4 3-pointers or something. Maybe I'm just throwing that out there. I know he scored double digits. A lot of guys are in double digits. Good to see Ruben Chinyelu's playing pretty well too, which is encouraging, but also kind of a scary when he's kind of your offensive option. But we'll see. Got some big games coming up. So we'll see how the boys can play.
Who had it in our preseason hot takes for basketball? Xavier Lee would lead the SEC in 3-point percentage shooting. Is that you, Dev? Hunter?
I said Urban would lead the league in 3-point shooting.
Well, 7 triples out west. Anybody get to watch the Providence game?
I watched it. It was a nice bounce back. It seemed like it was clear that Todd wanted us to focus on taking care of the ball. And this might just be what this team is. You know, they don't shoot it well, even when Xavier Lee is knocking down shots. And it seems like we might have, you know, this stretch of 4 or 5 games where we kind of eke out some wins. We grind out some wins with some good defense and score enough baskets. And then we'll just have a game where kind of we turn the ball over and it's going to be a close loss, just like Arizona was, just like the TCU game was. But it was good to see, you know, these tournaments when you're playing back-to-back. One, the game against Providence was without Alex Condon, but it's easy for things to kind of spiral. And so the Gators could have let TCU beat them twice, as they say. But they came out. It was great to see Xavier Lee hit some shots. Urban hit some good shots when he got a little run, and Ruben played really well. I thought Handbogdon was a little quiet in both games. Would like to see more out of him, especially when, you know, Condon has been very inconsistent so far to this point this season. So would like to see a little more out of Micah. But it just kind of seemed like the Gators are sleepwalking through those two games, you know, sort of how it goes with Feast Week whenever you're, you know, not playing in Maui or whatever the players' invitational thing was that was in Las Vegas. So you sort of flick it on, you watch some of the games, you hope the Gators win, but it seems to me like we have to reset the expectations. I think that if this team is able to achieve a 3 seed, that would be a really good year, you know, regular season for what we've seen to this point. But we'll see. I think we've got kind of a murderer's row coming up with UConn and Duke here next week. And so glad we got out of there, you know, not going 0-2, and need to get back on the horse and start hitting some shots in Cameron Indoor and Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, did anyone catch that Players Era tournament out in Vegas? I think the Gators start there next year for Thanksgiving. I think we have a 3-year deal in Vegas for the Players Era starting in the 2026-27 season. But I hope they have that whatever determination they have to get to the championship round or the top four spots, because I think you play for like 250 grand in the fourth place spot. You get 500 grand finishing third and a million to the winner. But that is based off of, I think there's like 30 something teams, and it's a point differential that determines where you fall into that seeding and if you get into the championship game. So it doesn't matter if you play the number one and the number three team in the country and you beat them both, but it was by an average of 4 points. You didn't get to go play for the $1 million. So anybody notice that watching Feast Week during the holidays?
I saw a couple comments that some people that run that tournament are already potentially having a conversation on changing that formatting for next year. And I would imagine they will, because that was crazy.
I'm glad the Gators aren't going until next year then. So hopefully they have all those kinks figured out before the Gators come to town.
Yeah.
I thought it was pretty cool. It kind of had that NCAA tournament feel.
Yeah. Tons of great games. I mean, a lot of ranked matchups and Michigan. Well, I don't know if you guys have to watch any of the Michigan. I think they won their games by an average of like 38 points, and all of them against top 25 teams, I want to say, or at least
two of them.
Three of the four. Yeah.
Gonzaga by 40 is crazy.
Nuts. Yeah. And that's a heck of a basketball program. Yeah. Stephen Pearl, he's having a tough time right now. I think
they bounced back and they won after they got kind of slaughtered by Michigan.
They did beat Rick Pitino and St. John's. I think they overcame nearly a double point deficit. But speaking of Auburn, Chaz Baker-Mazzara, ninth year player, getting teed up, celebrating the three ball. It's like, dude, you've probably made 1,000 of those in your college career. Why are we celebrating in a game like that? I think he unloaded the clip on somebody or something similar, and got teed up. So
heaven forbid. You
know, maybe 1 year in the college ranks, he can get that figured out. But
one of the one point about the basketball team, one of the things that I looked for last year to know whether or not the guys were going to be ready to play that night was whether we were making our free throws. It seemed like in games where we struggled with being focused or ready to play. Last year, we would miss free throws if we weren't ready to play. This year, I think that the indicator is going to be rebounding. I think TCU is the second smallest team in the country, and they out-rebounded us, or it may have wound up about even. With the best, quote-unquote, returning front court in the country, and with the guards struggling like they have, you can't get out-rebounded. And I think that was an effort thing and a thinking you could roll out the ball and be the defending national champions and go win a basketball game in San Diego thing. Part of the growing pains of being the defending champs, you're going to get everybody's best shot. And if you come out against a high major program, you know, even a team that's average like TCU, and you're not ready to play, you can get beat. So.
Yeah, and that's just the weird thing about basketball. I mean, I feel like we've heard that stat, whether it's the Gators or another team, they play a small, much, much smaller opponent, and somehow that other team finds a way to be a little bit more scrappy and athletic to get those second possessions offensively and put points on the board. I think TCU, I don't think it says it here. I'm looking at a stat sheet. No, it doesn't show me second chance points, but we did out-rebound them by three. They did collect eight offensive rebounds, but again, the biggest outlier and concern is the turnovers. Gators shot 44-54 from the line out west. I'll take those all day, considering how we've started this season from the charity stripe. But we got to protect the basketball. Just eight against Providence that helped us fuel a 12-point victory, and
I think
big one. Big one against Duke. What was that, Dev?
I think four of those were in the first 4 minutes against Providence.
Yeah, I didn't watch that game. So, getting off to some slow starts. Big one, I think. Didn't anybody watch the Arkansas-Duke game that was in Chicago? That was some high-level basketball that felt like a March environment. I believe that was on Thanksgiving night. Cameron Boozer had 33 or 34 points at one point. He was like 14 of 18 shooting. just a grown man. So Florida in that front court is going to have their hands full come Tuesday night in Cameron Indoor Stadium.
Excited to watch. I think that's kind of part of the reason that the taste from the weekend is a little different than it would normally be when you have a loss to TCU, because it is weird, like Will said, when you play in these little tournaments. You're used to playing twice a week, the midday and then the weekend, so you have time to digest. But when you lose to TCU like that on Thursday, it sucks. But then you come back Friday with the guard game that we've all been wanting all year. And so there's like a little bit of optimism right now just because you finally got that game where Xavier Lee comes alive and is able to shoot the ball well. And Boogie Flynn shot the ball well that game too. He was, you know, 4-10 behind the arc. And so, you know, you kind of hold out hope that it gets the guards going, especially with the way Urban's been playing. So, you know, obviously the TCU loss was tough, but hopefully that Providence game, those guards find something, and it's the time to find it, because non-conference wise, you're about to go through a gauntlet. So we're going to really find out what we're made of.
And I thought it was big that Xavier got to go away from the Stephen C. O'Connell Center. He didn't have to hear the crowd every time he touched the ball to shoot it, because he's been pretty timid from behind the arc when he's getting the basketball, to, with whether he's open or not, to go out west with a lot less of a hostile environment, holidays. People are just going there with your family if you're a Gator fan in that area. So good for him to get a little bit of confidence before we go take on Duke and then UConn the week after in Madison Square Garden. So big test for the Gators.
Yep. Isaiah Brown, by the way, I just had to comment because I thought it was very funny for those of you that watched the Providence game. Isaiah Brown had the funniest 12 minutes of all time. He had four personal fouls. He only played 12 minutes in the game, and he went 3-for-3 from the field. It was the weirdest 12 minutes. Every second he was in, he was either getting a whistle or a bucket. So I had to throw it out there. I was laughing with my father-in-law watching that.
Any last thoughts, fellas, before we wrap up? I know we are still trying to figure out no breakfast bites. The football season's come to an end. We're going to try to find some sort of midweek schedule for you guys where it intertwines not just the weekend basketball schedule, but along with our midweek basketball game. So we got to look at the schedules. I know some of those league games are either Tuesday or Wednesday, and we'll find the appropriate schedule to keep content flowing.
Well, once Summerall is introduced after Tulane has been knocked out of the playoffs that he is coaching in, we will we'll be back to recap everything he said.
Yeah,
I just saw a report from Ross Dellinger that some point today LSU is sending planes to Oxford to pick up Lane and his family, and Florida is pivoting to John Summerall, and they believe that they have there. It is believed, you know, all these writers write in the passive voice. It is believed that Florida and John Summerall have a deal in principle, but a final decision will come today. So maybe we'll get really lucky and he'll choose to be a member of the Green Wave as opposed to a Florida Gator. But
yeah,
this is the Breakfast Boys' toughest test yet. We got to stand together and keep fighting.
I forgot what. Go ahead, Dev.
Maybe he'll choose to be an Ole Miss Rebel.
Right, Lord, we can hope. I don't know. I forgot what my text said verbatim. But since the Breakfast Boys came online, it's been catastrophic for Florida athletics. I mean, it is just
a lot of casualties.
Hey, at least I saw you quote tweet this, Will, during or after the Florida State game. It sounds like one Florida State podcast is caving, no longer going to be on the airwaves. They are discontinuing after like 15 years. That's what Mike Norvell can do to you. 6 years of him in Tallahassee, but
it's the Meow Mix effect.
I was going to say they're pulling a Meow Mix.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure it was Bud Elliott and Knowles Cass. I'm not sure if they were just trolling after Meow Mix as a joke. But you'll never have to worry about with the Breakfast Boys. We are going, as you see, things will get really bad, and at least Jackson and I will be there. We're never deleting tweets. We're coming for you. At some point, we are going to get on the John Summerall bandwagon, and you best believe I'm going to be lying about how he's the best damn coach in America, and he's going to somehow lead us to a tidal wave of championships. But, you know, Breakfast Boys are here to stay. We're not pulling a Meow Mix.
Hey, in the meantime, at least we have a championship level baseball program to look forward to in the spring with no drama. Good spring sports season ahead of us that that Scott Strickland has in store for us. So good stuff ahead.
Some are calling him a no drama disciplinarian. that was a low joke, but it is just kind of sums up where Florida Athletics is.
Yeah. Well, guys, that concludes the 2025 regular season, our first season with you guys. So we appreciate the support, the listens. You guys have been awesome. We appreciate all the comments and feedback and questions you provide, whether it's voicemails, our Twitter, leaving comments on our YouTube page. So make sure you're liking and subscribed at Breakfast WTG on Twitter and YouTube, following us on Apple, Spotify, all that good stuff. And we've got plenty of more great content coming your way. Hopefully we'll have a new coach by time this is released, whether we like it or not, we will find ways to lie about them. So thank you again and go Gators.
Go Gators.
In all kinds of weather.
And all kinds of weather.
Let's go get our guy.